And we will move to the third case of the morning, which is number 083719, Elisha Hunter versus Amin.
Robert Miller for the plaintiff.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, let me state first for the record, since the issue of citizenship was raised in the defense in the appellee's briefs, that Elisha Hunter is a citizen of the state of Missouri. Hetel Amin is a citizen of Illinois. St. Clair County is a county in Illinois, and Merrill Justice is a citizen of Illinois. But the facts in this case are that Stanley Bell was a pretrial detainee in the St. Clair County Jail with a history of mental illness, and the jail provided a psychiatrist to treat him, Dr. Hetel Amin. Dr. Amin met with Bell, started to talk to him, and Bell stopped the doctor and asked the corrections officer present to leave. The nurse who was present and the officer told Bell that it was jail policy that a corrections officer had to be present during this interview. Bell said, then, we can stop this right now because I'm not talking to the doctor with the officer present. It violates my doctor-patient rights. The district court decided that this was that Bell then refused treatment by the doctor. Bell's assertion is that this was his assertion of his right to adequate mental health treatment and to confidential communication. The district court decided that the law and cases that the plaintiff cited referred only to privileged communication and not to confidential communication. It's the plaintiff's position that privileged communication in this circumstance with a psychiatrist or a therapist and confidential communication are the same thing, because you cannot have a privileged communication with your doctor when the communication is not confidential.
Well, the privileges referenced, though, are testimonial privileges. They don't give any kind of contour to the constitutional right at issue, which is medical treatment, which your client declined.
Well, Bell has a right to prohibit the doctor from testifying about his communication, but only if that communication is confidential, because once the communication takes place in a non-confidential setting, it is no longer privileged. He no longer has the right to prohibit the doctor from testifying about what he says.
This case isn't about a testimonial privilege. It's a constitutional claim for deprivation of adequate medical treatment, adequate mental health treatment.
It's for both.
Well, there isn't a constitutional right to the state law testimonial privilege. There's a constitutional right to adequate medical treatment, in this case mental health treatment.
There's also a constitutional right to due process of law, and the testimonial privilege is essential for that due process right.
But we don't have the testimonial privilege being infringed here.
Correct. we do not have the testimonial, but we have not come to that point because the doctor is not called to testify about his conversation with Bell, because that conversation never took place, because the initial conversation was not confidential. And if the initial conversation is not confidential, then Bell waives his right to assert the claim of privilege if there is any testimony.
I doubt that the testimonial privilege, had it been implicated in a state court proceeding, would have been denied on the basis that there was a corrections officer in the room when the medical examination took place.
Well, the cases that I cited, and there are no Illinois cases on that particular point, but the cases that I cited, I think one's from Missouri and one's from either Oklahoma or Iowa, said that there was no testimonial privilege when the conversation was done to a mental health care person in the presence of a corrections officer, police officer.
Were those claims like this one, though, being brought by the prisoner?
No. No. No, they were not.
Could we go back to the jurisdictional issue for just one moment?
Yes.
Is it your suggestion that the citizenship of the representative is what's to be considered in establishing diversity jurisdiction and not the residence of, in this case, the decedent?
You mean for diversity of citizenship?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that, but Bell was also a citizen of the state of Missouri, if that's an issue.
Okay, because the record, I think, was void of any indication of the citizenship of Mr. Bell.
Correct.
Okay.
But we have federal question jurisdiction in this case, and that's intact, and so there isn't an issue?
Oh, it's the citizenship?
The state law claim is here on supplemental jurisdiction.
Right.
Okay.
Second thing is the issue of was Bell denied adequate mental health treatment? And the plaintiff's expert, Miller, indicated that the standard of care required confidential communication with the doctor, and that's in document 39-2, pages 5 to 7. That's his deposition, pages 124 to 126. The defendant's position in this is that there is no right to privacy of private communication with the doctor because of security considerations. Dr. Amin testified that he did not need to have any physical contact with Bell, and that's in document 35-3, page 14 to 15, deposition pages 30 to 31. Jail superintendent, Mr. Knapp, testified that they did have non-contact visiting rooms where the doctor could talk to the patient over a telephone. He would not need to fear for his security whatsoever. The defendant suggested that Amin cannot use these rooms because of some particular jail policy. It's inconvenient and the doctor can't pick where he wants to see the patient. Then the Knapp testified that in this particular circumstance, we can have the patient in the room with the doctor, and the security officer and the nurse can go to an adjacent room where they can see the patient or the inmate, but cannot hear or overhear the conversation. That's in Knapp. Deposition document 35-9, pages 6 to 8, deposition 22 to 24. Then the defendant suggested, even in that circumstance, his fear of harm from this inmate who had a history of violence would preclude that solution or would preclude that type of confidential communication. The plaintiff suggests that there's a practical, simple solution that judges use every day in courtrooms all over the country. That's simply to shackle the inmate in his chair. And with the doctor sitting behind the desk and the inmate shackled in the chair, doctor should have no fear of any kind of violent confrontation.
This argument goes to the medical malpractice claim?
Yes.
What about the line of Illinois case law that says that if the patient declines treatment, there cannot be a med-mal claim?
That's obvious. If the patient declines treatment, that there cannot be a med-mal claim.
And it's undisputed here that he declined treatment.
Well, I think the plaintiff does dispute that. The most obvious evidence in the record that he's not declining treatment is when the doctor says, I'm going to withhold your medication. And the inmate says, if you do that, I'm going to cause you trouble. Clearly, the inmate at that point, or the detainee, is stating his a position that he wants treatment, but he just wants to talk to the doctor privately.
But the medical malpractice standard does not require that. Certainly neither does the constitutional standard in this case.
as a constitutional standard, but as a standard of care issue, a plaintiff's psychiatrist did testify that it was appropriate to talk privately.
Well, appropriate doesn't mean required. And you have to show a duty.
Well, it's in Miller's deposition, page 124-26, he didn't say required to talk confidentially.
There can't have been a breach of a Med-Mal duty if that's not required under Illinois law.
Did you concede in the district court that your client was capable of refusing medical treatment at the time?
I didn't raise that issue, no, Judge.
The physician, however, did continue to act, did he not, although there was a continuing relationship?
That's the plaintiff's position outlined in the brief, yes.
Receive reports on the patient's condition after the encounter?
Right, and his discontinuation of the medication was done to treat the patient.
And he arranged to see him again?
Correct.
And he took this affirmative step of stopping the Prozac?
Yes.
Is there anything in the record as to what the consequences of abruptly stopping Prozac are?
I think in my brief I cited that the plaintiff's expert Miller said that the medication was important to him and it did contribute to his suicide. Stopping the medication did contribute to his suicide. Only the last thing is that it's undisputed that St. Clair County does have a policy that a corrections officer has to be present at all times. Interestingly, in document 35-7, page 9, there's an interview by a psychologist. And there's no indication that a police officer was present during that interview. But anyhow, it's undisputed that St. Clair County does have a policy that a corrections officer has to be present at all times when a physician examines the detainee. Policy also denies the inmate detainees with mental illness confidential communication with a psychiatrist. That's undisputed. The case law that I set for indicates that confidential communication is essential to mental health treatment. And I haven't seen any case law to the contrary. And the statutes that I cite and the cases that construe those statutes also say that confidential communication is essential to mental health treatment. I see that my time is, I'm into my rebuttal time, so thank you.
Thank you. Oh, counsel, I'm not going to try to pronounce your name. You're up.
It pleases the court, counsel. My name is Richard Jepkema. I represent St. Clair County and Merle Justice, who's a sheriff. The claim against the county is that there's this policy that requires a correctional officer to be present during all medical examinations, including mental health evaluations. The claim must fail for several reasons. The first one is, while there are testimonial privileges regarding physician-patient as well as mental health privileges, those don't apply here because, as the court noted earlier, nobody's asking anybody to testify regarding any communications that occurred. Furthermore, the claim that communicating in the presence of a correctional officer would automatically waive some sort of privilege isn't supported by the Illinois statute. The Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Confidentiality Act actually defines confidential communications being made between a recipient and a therapist or in the presence of other persons. While other persons is not defined anywhere, I believe that a correctional officer who the patient or inmate has no choice of having present or not during that communication would qualify as other person. As such, there wouldn't be any waiver of any privilege. Second of all, this policy requiring a correctional officer to be present during all medical, including mental health evaluations, is also supported by Illinois regulations. The Illinois Administrative Code includes a section on county jail standards, and one of those sections regarding medical care and medical security requires a correctional officer to be present during all medical treatments with a physician or any other medical provider. As such, not only is this a reasonable standard in order to protect the medical personnel, including mental health personnel, who are providing this care from any danger from inmates like Mr. Bell, who was an admittedly violent inmate. Finally, even without a policy requiring the correctional officer to be there, Dr. Mean testified that he wouldn't have interviewed Mr. Bell without the officer present because of Mr. Bell's violent past. In fact, I believe he was transferred to the St. Clair County Jail after assaulting a correctional officer at his previous jail with a roll of quarters and a sack. Therefore, even if the policy wasn't there, Mr. Amin or Dr. Amin would have required the correctional officer to be present prior to providing any mental health care. If the court doesn't have any other questions or any questions, I will stand on the brief and allow counsel for Dr. Amin to use any remaining time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Unrath.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Craig Unrath, counsel. I handled a number of prisoner appeals over the years, and almost every one of them involves a defense raised by our trial counsel for qualified immunity, and I immediately discard it, throw it away. And the reason is pretty simple. Qualified immunity simply does not provide a defense for somebody found to have been deliberately indifferent to a serious medical need. So there's really no reason for me to argue that issue. It's a throwaway issue as far as I'm concerned. Now, for the first time, it may actually have some relevance. Plaintiff's counsel has abandoned her argument involving the civil rights claim. The sole remaining claim before this court is one for medical negligence, common law negligence. This is something where qualified immunity offers protection. Qualified immunity protects government officials, and my client, Dr. Amin, although working for a private corporation, is acting under color of state law. It provides protection for his discretionary functions. And importantly, the doctrine of qualified immunity offers wide latitude for mistaken judgments.
Are you referring to some sort of state statutory immunity?
No, it's just the federal qualified immunity.
But if it's a state common law claim, why would that have any relevance?
I believe that the same standards apply under the state law, that state government officials are immune from liability for suit.
So it is a state law immunity.
Yes.
So the answer to my initial question is yes.
Yes, it is.
It's not statutory. It's in the case law?
I believe it is, Your Honor. And unfortunately, I missed it in this case. I did not cite any argument in my brief. I raise it now for the first time in appeal and apologize to the court for this oversight. There is an established rule of law that this court may affirm on any grounds supported in the record, so I offer this as one additional grounds for affirmance.
Well, there's also an established rule of law that arguments not made are waived.
This is true, Your Honor, and and particularly true for the plaintiff. Arguments not raised in an initial brief are waived. Of course, this is a limitation on the court, not the parties. Turning to the merits of this case, the briefs here have focused on a single issue. Was the doctor-patient relationship severed? Now, I had a very difficult time with this issue. I researched law back and forth and sideways, and I could find very, very little law on this issue. Plaintiff's counsel found one case, but he had to go to Missouri for it.
Pretty fact-specific issue, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's a pretty fact-specific issue.
It is a fact-specific issue, and I think also that it kind of misses the point. There's a reason that the courts have never really addressed it, because they don't really need to. The primary issue is, did the patient refuse treatment? Now, if the patient did refuse treatment, that ends the inquiry. The doctor is under no duty to provide any treatment to that patient. So here's the situation we have here. We have a pretrial detainee, bipolar, who's transferred into the St. Clair County Jail. Now, in any jail, when a prisoner comes in, they are given a physical examination. In this case, this patient is bipolar. They're going to want to have him evaluated by a psychiatrist. He arrives and he insists on having a personal conversation with his psychiatrist. Now, Dr. Amin, in his entire career, had never had a personal consultation with an inmate.
By personal, I assume you mean private.
Private. That's precisely what I mean.
He's probably had lots and lots of personal conversations with patients.
Perhaps. In a case of a...
a very good psychiatrist.
Yeah, but with prisoners, I think that there's going to be somebody sitting in that room with him, particularly when the prisoner has a known proclivity for violence against correctional officers. There is no standard of care that would require Dr. Amin to sit alone in a private consultation with a prisoner known to be violent. So this leaves him with three choices. Mr. Bell has refused all treatment unless it could be a private consultation. That's not going to happen, and there is no reason that Dr. Amin should allow that. He has three choices. He can keep Bell on the same medication he's on right now and just step back. Just keep prescribing him what he was prescribed when he came in. Here's a problem, though. One of the things he's prescribed is Prozac, and Prozac leads people of suffering from bipolar disorder to have manic episodes. So in other words, if he allows him to just continue taking the medication he was originally prescribed, he's almost guaranteeing that this prisoner or inmate is going to remain in a state of manic state.
Isn't that a treatment decision to which a duty would attach?
I think so. I think it would be. I think it goes farther than that. If you stand back and say, he's refused treatment, so I'm not going to get involved. I'm going to let him continue taking the same drugs he's doing. And even though I know that those drugs will lead him to experience manic episodes, that is deliberate indifference. That's a constitutional violation, and it's completely unacceptable for any healthcare administrator to conduct themselves in that way.
Suppose you stop the Prozac abruptly, contrary to what is indicated as the proper course of treatment for that drug. Does that impose a duty?
Stopping the treatment is the direct result of his refusal to be evaluated. At that point, he had no choice. He could not prescribe any medication at all.
He prescribed it on a prescribed step-down course of administration until the man was off it safely.
I'm afraid, though, when the drug itself causes manic episodes, I question whether you want to be stepped down off this. In either case, that would require an evaluation. He needs to examine this patient to determine what is best for him. As it is, this patient refused to be evaluated. He cut off all medication, which has the added benefit of reducing the eliminating the medication that's causing his manic episodes, knowing that when this patient calms down, that that they can revive the doctor-patient relationship. But the key element here is this. If he does not submit to an examination, all medications, all treatment must stop. And he was warned of this. Dr. Amin told him, your medications will be stopped unless you submit to this evaluation. And he said, no, I won't do it. Your Honor, the prisoners are entitled to adequate medical treatment. They are not entitled to specific medical treatment, nor are they entitled to the best medical treatment. Dr. Amin was under no duty to hold a private consultation with this prisoner, and the alternatives of either allowing him to remain on medication he knew was bad for him or taking a guess, prescribing medication that he thinks, based on paper records, he thinks might be what's necessary, that is a violation of the standard of care. He can't do that.
Was there any expert medical testimony in the record contravening Dr. Amin's position on that subject?
Yes, there is the testimony of the plaintiff's expert. Our expert is there, but not in the record.
The plaintiff's expert said it was a mistake to take him off of Prozac?
Yes. At the same time, there were some vague complaints that he should not have been taken off Prozac. But as far as I know, there was no discussion there of whether Dr. Amin can, within the standard of care, continue any medication without examining the patient. And that's the key element here. If he's going to get medication, he has to submit to an examination. And this is something that Bell would have known. In prison, you don't get an aspirin without seeing a doctor. You don't get, if you have heartburn, you can't go to the commissary and buy Rolaids. You go to the doctor. All drugs are prescribed. All prisoners know that if you want medication, you have to see a doctor. That's just a standard routine, not just in the St. Clair County Jail, but in every jail in Illinois, and I would submit every jail in the United States. In the end, a plaintiff's counsel had mentioned that it is essential to mental health treatment that he have a private consultation with his psychiatrist. I will grant you that it may be a better consultation if a psychiatrist can do it in private. Is it essential? I disagree with that entirely. The fact that Dr. Amin has been treating inmates for their psychological problems for many years and never had a single inmate request a private consultation, I think that that says quite a bit as to whether or not this is essential or not. If there are no further questions, I ask that the court urge the court to affirm the district court's order.
Thank you, Mr. Unruh.
Thank you.
Mr. Miller, you have a minute and a half.
The refusal of treatment issue is a complicated one because Bell can't go anyplace else for treatment. He's confined. The only doctor there is Dr. Amin. If Amin stops treatment, then he has no treatment. Okay? And he's entitled to adequate mental health treatment. As far as the issue of confidential communication, Jaffe versus Redmond, U.S. Supreme Court, dicta, confidential communication is a sine qua non for mental health treatment. That's it.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
I ask you the court to reverse the district court's decision. Thank you.
All right. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.